Welcome back, everyone. As we close out the week, a big week that saw the third Democratic debate. Today, we're gonna talk a little bit about some of the fallout from it, in particular coming from not a Democrat, but a Republican. So that should be fun. We've also got another congressional candidate who's gonna be joining us a little bit later on in the show.
Excuse me.
MCA, sorry. Normally I do that before the intro, but then I realized I wanted to talk about.
Disrespectful loser.
I apologize.
It's been
literally
a long
week. The most important thing right now is that Emma's on the show today, which is great.
Course.
And we've been very excited to have you on the network all throughout the week. I'm sure the fans are loving it too. It's too bad that you don't make it out here more often.
I know. But you do
important work on the East Coast.
Yes, but it's really nice to be here and hang with you and Anna and all my friends.
Yeah, we had fun last night with Nando as well.
Yeah.
And a little bit later on, we're going to be doing something that's fairly new, but we're gonna be doing our top 10 concerns about the Elizabeth Warren candidacy. Effectively. We've been getting a lot of comments about it, and so we're gonna be expressing some of our concerns that hopefully she will address. We've also got a ridiculous attack ad against AOC. And yesterday, obviously the debate was the big news, but there was also Trump's retreat. And so we've got some video clips from that. That'll be a little bit of fun to close out the week.
Amazing.
It should be. But let's launch right into the fallout from last night. Meghan McCain is a Republican, so bear that in mind when absorbing her live tweeting of Democratic debates. But there was one thing that she really took issue at, and that was expressed in this tweet. Don't you dare lecture Biden about cancer, Bernie. So she was really angry that Bernie brought up cancer to Joe Biden. In case you didn't see the debate, here is the clip in question.
You gotta defend the fact that 500,000 Americans are going bankrupt. You know why they're going bankrupt? Because they suffered a terrible disease, cancer or heart disease. Under my legislation, people will not go into financial ruin because they suffered with a diagnosis of cancer. And our program is the only one that does that.
I know a lot about cancer. Let me tell you something. It's personal to me. Let me tell you something. Every single person who is diagnosed with cancer or any other disease can automatically become part of this plan. They will not go bankrupt because of that.
Okay, so there we have a disagreement on the policy between the two candidates that made up about the first 30 minutes or so of the debate, which is, that's perfectly fine. But who gets to talk about certain issues? That's where we might have an issue.
Everyone's family is affected by cancer. Biden has experienced an unspeakable tragedy when it comes to cancer and death in his family. I completely understand that. The fact that Bernie can't talk about cancer in the context of healthcare, that's an insane thing to say. Mm-hmm. And no one in their right mind should believe that.
Yeah. Yeah, look, Meghan McCain likes Joe Biden. Don't get your hopes up. She would never vote for him or literally any other Democrat. She's going to support the Republican nominee no matter what. She can talk against Trump every once in a while. She still wants Republicans in power. His horrible tragedy that he experienced does not mean that he has some sort of monopoly on talking about cancer, especially when. Was Bernie, is it fair to characterize what he was doing as lecturing him on cancer?
No, he was talking about the specifics of Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden's healthcare plans and how Bernie's will cover all things so that medical bankruptcies from those terrible diseases don't happen.
Yeah.
Biden is using his family's cancer as a shield to deflect from the fact that 10 million people would still be uninsured in his plan.
Yeah, and even more so, Meghan McCain is like, Joe, use it as a shield. You have to use it as a shield because of your experience and also sort of implicitly the experience of her dad that weaves through all of her commentary. And I understand that it's really important to you. That does not mean that you get to tell a presidential candidate to not talk about a subject. And if your experience with your dad gives you the right to tell him to shut up, my dad died of cancer, I give him the right to speak. How about that? We'll cancel each other out, and now we can have a serious conversation about the policy and not pretend that a person dying means you gotta be quiet, you gotta hush up about it. Biden had that horrible tragedy. I don't know about Bernie's family history because he doesn't talk about it very much, but I find it incomprehensible to assume that he hasn't lost a close friend or family member to cancer.
Well,
virtually everyone has.
His parents both died young, so we don't know if that was from that disease, but he knows tragedy too. So the virtue signaling, I hate that phrase, but that's really what it is, where she's basically saying that this is untouchable and you're an unethical person for bringing this up in the context of a policy debate. That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, let's see if her follow-on commentary about this is less crazy. She went on to say, Joe Biden is the grief whisperer. He both understands and communicates the struggle, I think she means, and pain, unlike any other person I've ever met. A leader who understands raw pain and knows how to heal, it would be a welcome and needed change in our country. How did you get out of that exchange that Bernie doesn't want to heal this pain? He wants to make sure that nobody experiences it. Like I said, my dad died of cancer. I remember him stressing over medical bills. And that was a long time ago. That was, I believe, pre-ACA. The huge amount of expense and stress on top of a horrible disease. Bernie wants to make sure that nobody has to go through that and that they have the best care available to them automatically.
Well, you're in politics, Meghan McCain. So how about you start talking about policy as opposed to these abstract notions of grief and pain and him being the grief and pain candidate? Everyone experiences grief and pain, and you don't get a monopoly on it just because your father is lauded as this bipartisan hero. He's a war hero, but he was a warmonger as well. And so just because he had a very public death at an older age doesn't mean you are an expert on pain more so than, say, Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, like the idea that Bernie hasn't experienced pain over the course of his long life, that is absolutely absurd.
He's experiencing pain trying to talk in this debate.
Exactly, you could hear it. And she mentioned that. And her comment about that wasn't as bad as some that I saw from people who don't like Bernie. Look, she's on the stage. She's a gigantic fan of Biden in comparison to the others. She also tweeted, "That is enough, Castro," to give you an idea.
Leaning into the outrage, Midwestern mom or Southwestern
exactly.
mom.
Okay, so after you get done saying, "That is enough, Castro," go back to saying how we're snowflakes who get triggered all the time. How about that? And she's one of the 100 most prominent political commentators in the country.
Yeah.
Maybe top 50, maybe more than that because of her position on The View. It's one of the most watched shows. And that's what you get out of her.
That is enough.
That is enough, Meghan McCain.
That is enough with this segment, John. We have to go to break.
Exactly. We are going to go to break. When we come back, lots to talk about on the other side.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Over the past few months, Elizabeth Warren has risen pretty far in the polls, now considered a front runner with Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. And along the way, we've done a lot of analysis of the various policy proposals she's put out. But that doesn't mean that there aren't concerns about her candidacy and what she might do were she to be elected president. And so in this video, Emma Viglin and I are going to present our top 10 issues with her candidacy as of right now.
Yeah, so I will include the caveat that I think she's the second most progressive candidate in the race. I think she has a lot of bold policy proposals and is really a brilliant candidate, really good one. So,
very similar caveat, she's my second favorite.
Right, right.
I mean, I've been very clear, call it biased if you want, that Bernie's my number one, but right. I'm just trying to put it out there.
Yeah.
But that said, why don't you start with your number five?
Sure, so I guess my number five, this isn't in extremely static order, but this is the one of the concerns I've had really is her military record budget, or her record on the military budget, and kind of tied into that, her more middle ground approach to Israel. So in the past, she had spoken at AIPAC. She was more aligned with the J Street Israel group, which is a more progressive, more leftist pro-Israel group that's more promoting of peace. But she kind of hedged and she talked about how, you know, Israel's always on the, under this onslaught of Palestinian rockets and all of this stuff, which in some ways is true, but now she's kind of shifted her tone. And I would love if she addressed it even more head on, because I think that the Israel's occupation of Palestine is one of the greatest human rights abuses in history, or in the history that we're living right now. And I'd love if she'd be more forthright on that.
A big part of that is going to occur in one of mine farther down the list. But on Israel, is your fear that were she to become president, it might be similar to the Obama thing?
Exactly.
Where occasionally she'll speak out, but there won't really be any opposition to big, you know, land grabbing moves, anything like that.
Yeah, and I think that where Bernie Sanders has a leg up on her is that he's been way more outspoken. And he also has the shield, in essence, as being a Jewish candidate, where he can't be smeared as anti-Semitic. But you can't be afraid of those things. I pushed Beto O'Rourke on this very topic, and he ended up saying that he would leverage aid to Israel to get them to end the occupation. I'd love if she'd make a similar statement.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some fear there. I mean, we saw what happened with Rand Paul a few years back when he said he would cut the aid. And then within 24 hours, he's like, no, I will not cut the aid.
Yeah,
I won't do that, don't worry. And so there's some fear there, but she should be fearless.
Right.
My number five is, this has been talked about a lot over the past couple of weeks. It's the belief that a combination of two stories means that she is reassuring party insiders that she's not their enemy. There was a meeting with some members of the Democratic establishment, and there was a meeting with Hillary Clinton. Now, I don't take that to be everything that she's saying is completely fake. I just don't. But even just strategically, they don't know how to win presidential elections. And so whatever lessons you think you will draw from them, I don't think they have much to teach you. Now that said, I think that there's every reason to believe that if Bernie becomes the nominee, he might well meet with Hillary Clinton at some point too. She'll certainly be campaigning for him. She wants a Democrat to take the White House back. But especially this early on in the primary, you should know how that looks.
Yeah, and that is a little bit further up on my list too.
Okay.
I guess my number four would be her tiny amount of waffling on Medicare for All. Now, no one is as vociferously in favor of Medicare for All as Bernie Sanders. Elizabeth Warren raised her hand when she said she would abolish private insurance. But when you look at her website, she also talks about the role of private insurance when it comes to mental health care. And mental health care is health care. So she hasn't gone full bore when it comes to Medicare for All, and I want her to be more embracing of that. Just in the proposal as it is, right? Without some of the waffling on the specifics. I think she's trying to leave a little bit of wiggle room, just in case she doesn't want to be called out for maybe promises she thinks she can't keep. But as we talked about last night during the debate coverage, Medicare for All single payer system, you have to go 100% at it so that the system isn't undercut and it's not as easy to overturn and chip away at.
My number four, similar to you about the military budget, mine is larger concerns about lack of information about her approach on foreign policy.
Right.
It's not to say that, like, I can't go back through her record and identify 10 things that look horrifying about what she might do or anything like that. Other than possibly supporting the military budget, which granted almost all of them do, but Bernie Sanders didn't. And so clearly you don't have to, you could stand against that. And it's harder to believe that you're gonna significantly cut military spending in the future if you're supporting increases now. Couple that with, I couldn't do a 10-minute segment describing what her overall philosophy and foreign policy really will be. And I want that information. It is somewhat reassuring to me that she doesn't make a centerpiece of her campaign, you know, foreign military adventures and things like that. It doesn't seem to be much of her focus. I want her to focus her attention here in the US, but I need more information about what's gonna happen with Afghanistan, what's gonna happen with Iraq, what will she do with the military budget? And so just as she's released really complicated plans in other areas, I think it's long, including, by the way, Social Security today, it's long overdue for us to know what you think about the military, our forever wars and all of that.
Absolutely. I think that she took a step in that direction last night with her answer on Afghanistan and her wanting to get out of Afghanistan, withdrawing the troops without a deal with the Taliban, which was just this prerequisite that only existed last week starting because of Donald Trump's purported meeting with them. So I completely agree with you. She needs to come out with some sort of comprehensive plan, as she has with her domestic policies, which have been great.
Yeah. And really, really fast to add on to that, I think one reason she might not have yet is, and this is, I'm not sure that everyone will agree with me, and it is somewhat depressing, but I think that especially inside of this Democratic primary in 2019, I think that the voters have that fairly low ranked, any of these issues. I don't think they're really thinking about it. That's scary.
Yeah.
But like Biden's record on Iraq hasn't really hurt him yet. Tulsi Gabbard's core issue is these wars, and it hasn't really caught on. Those are signs to me that this is not something that's being prioritized right now.
Well, it might have caught on if she was consistent on that topic, but that's just my view.
I'm just saying, I don't think that the future of these wars is like in the top three of most Democratic voters.
Absolutely, and you know, I agree that it should be higher on people's priority lists. I would also say that I think maybe there's some strategic thing about how she's holding on to her plan to wait for later to like
maybe
make a headline, because she's been releasing them somewhat strategically.
That's true.
I don't know.
Maybe.
That's the generous interpretation. So I hope that now that there's mounting pressure on her, I hope that she comes out with a comprehensive plan. My number three was exactly what you said, cozying up to Democratic insiders. That does concern me, because I think she should be bucking those very people. And she's, again, trying to thread that needle, which I think is nearly impossible at this point. She's doing as good of a job as she possibly can, but it's frustrating where she has all these populist tendencies, but I really do think the draw of the establishment Democrats is really pulling her back in certain instances. And some of the people that maybe she's surrounding herself with are giving her that inclination. And I'm a little wigged out by that.
Yeah, and one of like if Bernie was to become president, I don't know where on my list of priorities it would be, but I look forward to the gutting of the DNC and the remaking of it in a progressive image. That's what I want to see. That could happen under Elizabeth Warren, but if she's reassuring them that it won't, I'm much more nervous about the future of the DNC.
We don't know if she's doing that.
Yeah, we don't honestly know. I'm just saying Bernie's pretty clear, I think.
Yeah,
and
then that's also an obstacle for him, right? Is that they're trying with all their might to ensure that he doesn't get the nomination because they're terrified of him.
Yeah, that's true.
So she's again trying to thread that needle, but I think, and I see her perspective, but in the long term, I don't know if I agree.
My number three is going to be the difference between her plan to combat the climate crisis and Bernie Sanders. It's not to say her plan is bad. It's good. A lot of activists really like it. It puts a good amount of money into it, but it is not nearly as well-funded or aggressive or all-encompassing as Bernie Sanders' plan. In terms of sheer dollars, it's $3 trillion rather than $16 trillion. We can have a long debate about exactly where that number should be, but I think that as of right now, while her plan is good, a candidate like Bernie Sanders has it as a more central part of his campaign. He has been talking about it for years and years and years, which reassures me that it's going to stay a big part of what he would be as president. And I think a greater willingness to take on fracking. There's a number of issues where her plan is good, but in comparison to Bernie's, his is just better.
Yeah, and it's just more. There's $16 trillion versus three. That's pretty substantial. And again, we've talked about this when we're looking at how to play politics. You start the goalpost where you would ideally want it, and then you work back. So
exactly.
She starting it there, she should be starting it a little bit further along, especially if we're talking about the existential threat of climate change. So my number two is her comments about unilateral disarmament about big money in the general election. So she has said that she doesn't believe in unilateral disarmament, taking big money. I don't think she's that corruptible or she's some sort of shill. She's made her entire career off of challenging big money and corruption in Wall Street. Mm-hmm. But then why say that? That's a really bizarre thing to say. If you think big money corrupts, you think big money corrupts. And don't court big money donors in the general election, basically to assuade and not freak out the Democratic establishment that you're still going to have a lot of money to defeat Donald Trump. Just stick to your principles on that topic.
Yeah, especially when it opens you up, if you're the candidate, to attacks from Donald Trump, who will pretend that he's against those same interests when he's obviously not, but he likes to say that he is. And by the way, if you're the nominee, you're going to be running against Donald Trump. People are going to give you a lot of money. They really want to see him lose. You're not going to have a problem generating money during a presidential election. You don't need it from those people. So my number two is going to be Medicare for All. I want to know for sure what you think, and I want you to be consistent. Bernie Sanders is the leader on this. Everyone is talking about some version or variant of his plan, or they have their own plan, but they want to make it seem like his plan. That's consistency. For her, it appears that she very much does support it, but it doesn't always appear exactly that way. Like if I can go to your website and it's not really clear, then that's just not as good. It feels a little bit like Beto O'Rourke at one point back during that election. There should be no vacillation on an issue as important as Medicare for All. Doesn't mean that she's not interested in it. It doesn't mean that she's lying about it. But it perhaps means that she might be more susceptible to negotiations that weaken it were she to become president and push for the policy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Beto supports Medicare for America now. So he's been pretty clear. It's not Medicare for all anymore. But she stuck to it.
But at one point he was in favor of it.
Yes, yes. But like they're all saying it. They, Medicare for all. No, it's one bill.
Yeah.
So my number one is really just an overall tendency to be calculated. So we saw it with Standing Rock. We saw it with waiting for the Hillary Clinton endorsement and not endorsing Bernie. She waited. She was the last female senator to endorse Hillary Clinton, Democratic senator. And she waited and waited and waited until it was pretty much a done deal. Then she endorsed her. I didn't like that. It's a tendency to be overly calculated as opposed to going with her instincts, which I am sure are more progressive because I've seen it in her every day-to-day work as a senator and a legislator. So just stop with this. Stop courting the Democratic establishment. You're a great candidate on your own without these all these things dragging you down into the muck.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have liked if she had done that. I think that it could have, in some hypothetical world, it could have made a difference if she'd done it early on in that primary. I don't think that it would have been the difference necessarily. I think it's impossible to point to one thing that would have been the difference, but it would have been a good move. I'm not gonna hate her based on it. I mean, it would be weird for me to be angrier at her about that than Bernie is, but I wish that she had done it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my number one is going to be, and this is something I talked about on the stream last night. It's really about what is buttressing all of your policies and your platform. Who are you? What's your class in a role-playing game sort of sense? Bernie is a movement leader. He's an organizer. He is going to push through his policies with an overarching philosophy of revolutionary change, questioning capitalism, broaching subjects that don't generally get talked about, and doing it as an organizer. She has a lot of the same policies, but she doesn't have that thread tying them all together where she will be the leader of a movement necessarily.
And she's trying to say that now to co-opt the language.
Yeah. You should, pragmatically, she should, because I think that people will like that, but it's just, it's not the same thing. And I don't just want to know what you want to do if you become president. I want to know how you'll prioritize it, how much strength you'll bring to it, how much passion you'll bring to it. Who are you willing to piss off with your policies? Are you willing to question capitalism at the end of the day, whether it's actually the best system for America? Those sorts of things, a sort of more broad philosophical approach to change. And so I think that behind all of the similarities that they might have in policy, I do think that there are different people between those. And I come out more on the side of Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, so
yeah.
I think that was healthy.
I think it was healthy as well. We have to look critically at all of these candidates, the candidates we like, the candidates we don't like. We cannot lose our minds when someone criticizes a candidate that we're a fan of. And at the same time, while we do this video acknowledging issues that we have with her, that is not me saying that she's Joe Biden or she's Hillary Clinton. And it is definitely not that it would be better for Donald Trump to get reelected than for her to become president. So all those caveats in mind, these are some things that we would like to see addressed through the rest of this campaign. Okay, with that, we are gonna take a short break. We come back, Republicans are coming for AOC in a pretty disgusting ad after this.
This is the face of socialism and ignorance. Does Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez know the horror of socialism?
Okay, so there is ignorance in that ad, but it's not AOC who's spreading it. We're gonna have more of that ad because it almost gets crazier after this. And we'll play it for you. But that is an ad that ran on ABC during a major Democratic debate that millions of people saw that lights a congresswoman's picture on fire. A congresswoman who has already been the target of a number of different death threats, incitements to violence. There have actually been plots to kill her. A random person hid in her closet, theoretically could have done something. And so the gleeful threatening that she be set on fire, I personally have a problem with that. I think it's going a little bit far.
Oh, a little bit far?
Yeah, you don't a little
think bit. So? I mean, the it never happens on the left, right? Like we're not airing ads on Republican debates or major Republican networks or whatever, lighting Donald Trump's face on fire.
Yeah.
I mean, they know what they're doing, and it's scary the lengths that they'll go to just to whatever raise money for new GOP or GOP new faces.
It's a new faces pack, yeah.
Yeah, well, they're lighting her face on fire for the new face that's gonna come in or whatever.
Yeah, I was trying to think of has anything been done like this? Like setting a picture on fire? And I thought, I think the closest thing is that here on the Damage Report, we have a segment called Garbage People, where we, when someone does something awful, we put a picture of them in a tiny little trash can. We don't put it in a grave. You crazy people, you're like the death imagery constantly. Now look, obviously AOC concerned about this. She does not back down when people attack her. She stands up for herself and she said, Republicans are running TV ads setting pictures of me on fire to convince people they aren't racist. Life is weird. GOP's message, no policy, no facts, just displays of violence and corporations like ABC Network and Sinclair who amplify them. They profit from burning my likeness on TV, but who pays for heightened security? Who answers the phones for the threats resulting from a violent false ad? And guess what? If you also believe in a free and open democratic society where people are treated humanely and don't die over $300 insulin or needless war, they'll call you a communist too. Well, they don't scare us or shake our focus. We are going to build a better world.
Yeah, I just admire her strength so much when it comes to these attacks. As someone who, you know, gets an iota of it online, of a woman who, you know, I try to put myself out there and I'm, my face is on the internet or whatever, and I get scary comments sometimes. I am extremely sympathetic to the notion that she just put out right there that she is, they profit off her likeness, they profit off this violent imagery of her, but then she gets the repercussions of that imagery and she's just a regular congressperson who isn't, you know, shilling herself out, for lack of a better word, to get a bunch of money so that she can hire security for herself. Mm-hmm. That's scary because you get the consequences of this higher platform of all of these things that you're trying to do without really any of, like say, what the president would get, the security that he would get and stuff. And she arguably needs it just as much as him.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, she has to be scared all the time because they can't go a month without some sort of major official threat like this on a billboard or, you know, a speech from Donald Trump or whatever. But also all of the people who work in her offices, they have to be scared that some psycho is gonna come in with a gun. And when you run an ad like this, you cannot be ignorant of what's been going on. You know exactly what your base is like. You know the percentage that are gonna like this. You know the slightly smaller percentage who are gonna think about it. And you know that there are still people, even once you cut it down to a very tiny number, who theoretically might act on this. We are just in the wake of racist mass shootings in Texas. To release this sort of ad, first of all, ABC, she rightly points out, they're profiting off of this. But even if it wasn't a monetary thing, there is no way that this ad should have made it through their standards and practices. You don't get to light people on fire, like in effigy or in any form.
Yeah, and it blows my mind that the standards for political ads are so low, and yet the standards for corporate regular ads, you wouldn't be allowed to do this for a regular person in a toilet paper ad, in a firewood ad or something, not to make it a terrible analogy. But I also just want to also consider Ilhan Omar gets this at just as much, maybe even more, based on her faith. And Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, there are more women who face the consequences of this kind of rhetoric. And it's inflamed consistently by the president. And then also, of course, by these major GOP donors who want to profit off of the fear that this elicits in the Republican base, who then goes to the polls, votes for Republicans, who vote for tax cuts, who then in turn fund the next ad for these Republican think tanks. It's this vicious cycle that is propped up by racism, xenophobia, and bigotry.
Yeah, exactly. And Ilhan Omar really does get it. I tweeted something in defense of her when people turned 9/11 into an attack on Ilhan Omar, and I got like 1,000 comments attacking her as a response to it.
The replies to her tweets are despicable on a daily basis.
Yeah, I'm gonna show you in just a sec the rest of the ad. The person who ran it, the candidate, is non-white, and so she says, I'm not white, I'm not racist. That's fine, you know that you're appealing to racists, you know that that is what you're doing, okay? So let's watch the rest of it, it gets even crazier.
This is the face of socialism and ignorance. Does Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez know the horror of socialism? My father was minutes from death in Cambodia before a forced marriage saved his life. That's socialism. Forced obedience, starvation. Mine is a face of freedom. My skin is not white. I'm not outrageous, racist, nor socialist. I'm a Republican.
That's socialist, and that's bat-esque crazy, okay? That's all that is. It's also historically ignorant, because let's just mention briefly that fundamentally why those massacres went on, it's not like you can just say, Americans had nothing to do with it. Our presence had nothing to do with it. There was a great write-up by Robert Mackey in The Intercept who wrote, as the journalist William Shawcross explained in his book Sideshow, Kissinger, Nixon, and the Destruction of Cambodia, the rise to power of the Khmer Rouge rebels in Cambodia was facilitated by the secret bombing campaign started in 1969 by a Republican president, Richard Nixon, and his Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger. Khmer Rouge finally seized power in Cambodia 6 years later, but its reign of terror, Shawcross wrote, was, quote, born out of the inferno that American policy did much to create. It was not created because somebody wanted to raise the minimum wage and make sure that, you know, our climate isn't devastated by climate change.
Exactly.
Yeah. ABC, people are attacking them online, like the hashtag boycott ABC. They need to know that this is unacceptable, and there will be follow-on ads like this at future debates if we do not speak up now and let networks know that this is not acceptable. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We come back, interview on the other side. Joining us now is a congressional candidate running in Illinois' 1st District, Robert Emmons Jr. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, John.
Good to have you here. I'm excited to talk about the district, the history of the district, and also your candidacy, because it's pretty unique, even amongst other like younger runs. You're a 26-year-old candidate running against an incumbent who has been in office for literally your entire life. What is that like?
Oh, that's a really good question. It's truly an honor to be a 26-year-old young person from the South Side of Chicago, advocating to make this the very last generation to be faced with everyday gun violence. And there's also a certain level of just, again, this honor to be able to represent a constituency that's so resilient, like the people of the 1st Congressional District. This is a district that was represented by one of the first black mayors of a major city, Mayor Harold Washington. President Barack Obama ran for this seat in 2000 against this exact same incumbent. And back in 2000, he was saying the same things that I'm saying now, and that it's time for change, and that the current incumbent has lost touch with the constituents. So you can only imagine what the last 20 years has looked like if 20 years ago the President Barack Obama was saying the same thing. And it's just, like I said, it's just a huge honor and a blessing to be able to advocate for progressive change here in this district, and the people of the 1st District. They've been resonating with the message, which has been inspiring, and our total philosophy is that we don't have a monopoly on best ideas. That's where our campaign slogan is, we are the solution together. It means that not one person is gonna solve all these problems. It's gonna take the entire community actively engaging towards social justice. So it's been pretty cool. I'll say it in short, it's been amazing. It's been amazing.
So you mentioned there the gun violence, and would you consider that a core issue for your candidacy? I know that you've talked about your own personal experience of losing someone very close to you through gun violence.
Yeah, it is absolutely core to our campaign, John. And we've been talking about everyday gun violence. A lot of time in the national media, we talk about the mass shootings that happen all around the country, which are tragedies. But we also need to talk about the everyday gun violence that occurs in my community on the South Side of Chicago. We need to talk about how, in order to solve gun violence, we got to take a comprehensive approach to it. We got to talk about a living wage. We got to talk about universal pre-K. We got to talk about ending mass incarceration. All of these issues are interconnected. That means the solutions have to be interconnected as well, like the Green New Deal and Medicare for All. And that's what we've been fighting for here on this campaign. Like you said, it is something that's deeply, deeply personal to me and my community. And there's nothing in this world that's going to stop me from talking about everyday gun violence and the solutions thereof until we can live into a world in which we don't have to, because there is no more everyday gun violence in our communities.
You mentioned there the Green New Deal. Your opponent, Bobby Rush, he said that the Green New Deal was a, quote, media creation like Bigfoot. What do you think about that?
The Green New Deal is an aspirate that was championed by folks like AOC, is a resolution that aspires to right the wrongs of our country and reverse the impacts of climate change, so we have a world that we can actually live into 20, 30 years from now that looks better than what we have right now. It will create jobs and benefit our community through economically. So for the sitting member of Congress, one in a very safe Democratic district to say that it's a smash and grab, is that it's a media creation similar to Bigfoot, is an injustice in and of itself, and it doesn't represent the interests or the ideas of the people of the first congressional district. And like we've been saying over and over and over again in this campaign, the current incumbent is out of touch, so it's time we need to get him out of office if he isn't going to represent the interests of our people.
So I want to ask you a question I ask almost all the candidates that come on that aren't currently holding office. Congress just came back into session this week after a number of different mass shootings, concerns over corruption in the Trump administration, a number of high profile issues. If you were already holding this seat, what would you have spent this week working on in D.C.?
I would have spent this week working on bringing in the entirety of our country. As we go around the district, what we are saying is that we are gun violence prevention advocates with the emphasis on prevention. Every single law-abiding citizen in this country should be gun violence prevention advocates, whether you are a staunch Second Amendment right supporter or not. What we are saying in this campaign is we support your right to bear arms, but you also have a responsibility to arm yourself with forward thinking, a responsibility to arm yourself with love and compassion, a responsibility to take care of your community and your family. So that's why we want you to be a gun violence prevention advocate. We got to talk. We got to be on the same page in this country if we're truly going to end everyday gun violence and mass shootings around this country. 100,000 people per year are either wounded or killed by a gun every single year. In 10 years, there's going to be 1 million Americans that will have been directly impacted by gun violence, not to count the countless people that will be tangentially impacted by gun violence. This is an existential crisis, and we got to solve it. We got to solve it. Generations to come are counting on us to make decisions right now that are going to make their lives safer.
Well, Robert, taking on a 26-year incumbent, it's a bold candidacy. Where can people find out more about your stance on the issues?
Absolutely. So you can find more about our campaign on robertemmons.org. That's EMMONS.org. And then you can also take a look at our Twitter at REMMONS2020. And the same thing with Instagram and Facebook. We would love for you to get involved, donate, sign up to volunteer. We need all hands on deck if we're going to truly change this country once and for all.
Robert Emmons Jr., thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
We're going to take a short break. We come back. Yesterday, there was the big GOP House retreat. Donald Trump spoke, sort of, after this. Last night, while the Democrats were having their debate off in Houston, Donald Trump took a trip to Baltimore. You remember Baltimore, the disgusting rat and rodent infested mess that he called it. Well, he was there for the annual House Republican retreat, and he gave an address that was very well received for some reason. We're going to try to figure it out. Here's the first clip. This has to do with clean water. It's about how he's rolling back Obama era protections for waterways.
That and the Clean Waters Act, which didn't give you clean waters. By the way, today we have the cleanest air, we have the cleanest water that we've ever had in the history of our country right now. And just for the press, because they'll get me on that one, I'm thinking, let's say the history of our country over the last 25 years. You know, I would say that the first few years they probably had cleaner air and cleaner water because there was nobody here. So I have to be very accurate, but they'll put it on anyway. They won't put, right, Louie? They won't put the second part on. They won't put the explanation on.
But you, you added that to be accurate and said that in the history of our country, 25 years ago, no one was here. If you meant decades, that's not accurate. What are you saying?
He's not saying anything, and they're just laughing along with him.
Maybe they're laughing at him.
He says it with confidence, so it makes it so.
Yeah. Yeah, I also love, you know what I love? The Clean Waters Act didn't give you clean water. You know what you've got? The cleanest water ever. Again, I don't understand what point you're trying to make. These regulations didn't give you clean water. Give me credit, because our water's so clean.
But it's literally not. I mean, he can attack Newark, or he can attack Flint, or all of these other areas and blame it on Democrats, and then turn around and go, because of me, we have the cleanest water.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I love? When you're asked a question about climate change and you respond about how clean the water is. Okay, that has nothing to do with it. And you're wrong.
Yeah.
Let's move on to a somewhat related issue having to do with trying to make our power generation more efficient and a little bit cleaner. Here he is on light bulbs.
The light bulb. People said, what's with the light bulb? I said, here's the story. And I looked at it. The bulb that we're being forced to use, number one to me, most importantly, the light's no good. I always look orange. And so do you. The light is the worst.
It's like, I mean, I like the self-acknowledgement of the orange thing, but
I get what he's trying to do, but it's stupid.
Yeah, well,
it's stupid, not. Oh, you
go first. Of course it's stupid. I mean, the part of the issue is that he's deregulating one of the most successful elements that were like didn't really piss off many people in industry, which was making sure our light bulbs were energy efficient and for no reason seemingly, except to appease like one small manufacturer of these light bulbs, he's gotten rid of this regulation. And so he's now touting it. I mean, he's talking about the cleanest air and the cleanest water. What you've just done is in direct contradiction to that.
To both of those things, yeah. He lied about it being more expensive. Yeah. Yes, the individual bulbs are more expensive, but they last far, far longer. And so you save a lot of money in the long run. And of all of the ways that if you had the weird conservative knee-jerk need to attack the light bulbs, of all the ways that you could do that, he chose the stupidest one, that it makes him look too orange. First of all, LED lights, unlike the lights they're replacing, can change their color temperature. You can modify it. But if any complaint is to be made, it's that it's too blue, not too orange, which is what incandescent bulbs actually are. So I think
John,
he's fundamentally confused about what bulbs he's talking about.
He doesn't even care. He's just talking.
Yes, he should.
The media calls me orange. Bulbs, light, orange, joke. That's the mind.
So he had a light bulb that went off and it was
and it was
blue.
A very dim one. It was one of the ones that he's trying to bring us back to that are deregulated.
Exactly. Okay, so and it gets even weirder. He was talking about the Green New Deal again, sort of.
No more cows, no more planes. I guess no more people, right? Because Kevin is just like a cow, he's just smaller. I had to pick somebody for that one, Kevin, and I just looked at that beautiful political face of yours, you know?
Beautiful political face.
Did you have to? Why were you obligated? First of all, as I think you pointed out, if you're gonna pick anyone as the cow, Devin Nunes is obviously the cow, considering Twitter. So if there were no planes, there'd be no people. That's a weird stance to take. And he's basically a cow, but smaller.
Yeah.
That's deep.
Kevin McCarthy.
We're all animals. It's an interconnected body. You guys have cow B-roll. You guys are ridiculous. He's a cow, just smaller. Okay, 2020. Anyway, a little bit more ridiculousness. Here he is talking about some of the important people at an event.
Chuck Grassley was there, and Joni Ernst, and John Thune, and Mike Pounds, and so just a whole group of great people.
Mike Pounds.
Notable Republican, Vice President Mike Pounds.
Right.
He's your running mate, man. You don't know his name. It's not even long. It's not complicated. It's Mike Pence. That's it. He's not Sir Pounce from Game of Thrones.
Right. That's what I was about. I was thinking he's the cat. He's Tommen's cat. But I was just thinking like, actually you said it. If him and Biden ran against each other, it would just be incoherent sentence responding to incoherent sentence. It's like that viral clip of the two twin babies talking to each other and like mimicking their adult conversation. That's what it would be.
Exactly. Like, I guess, and like I said, it's like, I guess Mike Pounce is, if your brain is turning into tapioca pudding, this is at least a cute way for that to happen, like when Biden calls him Donald Hump. But like, come on, you guys need to have like six brain cells to rub together for us to have a coherent debate. Anyway, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Where can people see more of your work?
YouTube.com/RebelHQ, Facebook.com/RebelHQ, Adam of Vigeland on Twitter, maybe not on Instagram because I suck at it. How about that? Good promotional work by me.
I can't do Instagram much either. And I realized recently that we haven't been using Facebook almost at all. There's too many. They need to meld them all together.
Twitter, though, I'm okay with that one.
Yeah, we certainly do a lot of that. Yeah, follow her on Twitter as well. So thank you again. Thank you, everybody, for watching throughout the week. Big stuff planned for next week. In 2 weeks, by the way, Emma will be rejoining us. So look forward to that as well. And we'll see you on Monday. So we've been lucky enough to have Emma Vigeland in LA, and she's been doing shows on our network throughout the week. And I thought it'd be fun to just have a little conversation with you. Questions from the audience.
It's our first conversation all week. I've been avoiding exactly. You, and we don't talk or hang out.
Not necessarily about politics. Some of these will be political, but some of these will just be for fun.
Okay.
First of all, Pamela Ware left a comment saying, thanks for the fantastic job you did this week. It was awesome getting to hear from you this way.
Thank you for the compliment. That's so sweet.
Benjamin Sellis says, can she live in California and be on every day?
No.
No? Okay.
I already said no.
No?
Okay. It would be easier, but all my friends and family are in New York, and also I travel all the time, so I'm just gonna live where my friends and family are if I'm gonna travel all the time.
And it's good to have somebody doing work on the East Coast going to different cities in that region.
Yeah.
Okay, so Whitney asks, Emma, what is your favorite thing to do when you wanna relax from your stressful job?
I've been clear that I'm an insane sports fan, so I watch them. It actually causes more stress in my life. I don't know what I'm talking about. But the Mets, I watch in the summer, fantasy football, the Giants, right? I'm a huge Giants fan. Sunday is my NFL Red Zone where I don't leave the house. And I watch NFL Red Zone from 1 to, well, then Sunday Night Football at 8. So 8 to 11 Eastern, that's my life.
Jeez.
For 16 weeks. And so that's a big part of it. And then the Knicks and the Rangers, I'm a huge fan of. I listen to podcasts about that too. I also like to box.
Really?
I
didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't box against other people, but I like box against a bag. That's my favorite workout. There's some pretty cheap places in New York City, although the gloves they give you smell great.
Oh.
Yeah, I need to buy my own, but I don't want to make the purchase. So I do that. I work out sometimes, and I like weed. Cheapish. It's legal here.
It is. It is. You better not like it when you go home.
I don't.
Yeah.
For strictly legal purposes.
Exactly.
I did get in trouble for it when I was 19.
Really?
So, yeah, I got handcuffed.
Mm. She's been much more careful in the 2 or 3 years since then.
Yes.
So Austin Joey Anderson asked, does Emma think that the debate moderators did a good job of posing questions and framing issues in a fair and objective manner?
No.
He didn't like the question about Venezuela.
Oh my God, no, I don't. I mean, again, the whole healthcare debate was framed from a right-wing perspective. You're gonna take health insurance from everyone else. No, it's just disingenuous. You guys know that that's not the case. They're gonna replace it with something else. So yeah, for maybe 0.2 seconds, you won't have the health insurance from your employer, but then you'll get it from the from the government plan. It's so dumb.
There were a couple people. I'm seeing this one from Amanda, who asked about the AOC ad that we talked about in the show. Basically, do you think that it's more likely to actually end up backfiring and hurting them than actually hurting AOC?
I think it's a net neutral. I feel like the people that will love it will be the GOP rabid fan base that already hate her and want to see bad things happen to her and are racist and cruel. I think that they'll, but the people that are in, the Trumpies will love it, right? But the independents and the Democrats are already grossed out by this stuff.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really what we're seeing consistently. I have a really hard time believing that this current GOP with these tactics is gonna be able to win over the middle of the electorate.
There were a few people who asked questions on Twitter about the amount of time given to certain candidates. One didn't think that Warren got enough time last night. A few posted that they thought that once again Andrew Yang didn't get enough time, and he did in fact only get 7.5 minutes compared to 17.5 for Joe Biden. Do you think that that's more on the moderators? Should he be more aggressive? If he's more aggressive, will it make any difference because they can just not call on you?
So I thought Bernie didn't get enough time, but you actually told me last night he got the second most amount of time.
I think he got 14 minutes, 14 and a half.
Yeah, and Biden got 17.
17 and a half, something like that.
So of course Biden gets the most per usual, but says nothing at all. But Bernie, I dropped the pen. I don't need the pen.
No, you're not writing.
I'm not writing anything.
No.
I just like fidgeting with it.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie, I thought, didn't get enough time at the time, but I guess he did. I think it was more just like one big chunk at the beginning, one big chunk at the end. Warren, like, she didn't get enough time, but she just sits pretty, right? She's been just doing amazingly and skyrocketing in the polls. So honestly, I think just be safe with it. You're good. And the points that she did make,
She
spoke very eloquently. Andrew Yang, like, I hear what he's saying, and there is kind of a de-emphasis on him. I mean, was it CNN or MSNBC that didn't even get his name right the other day?
MSNBC, I think.
Yeah.
Called him John Yang.
Which is a joke. But he also, the onus is on him to speak up a little bit more. He has had this issue now in three debates where he has been the person who spoke close to the least.
I think he's been the least in all three of his.
Yeah,
I think.
So address this internally as well, because even if there's the media is biased against you, which we've certainly seen because he's a non-traditional candidate, you still gotta address, you gotta combat that yourself, because they're not gonna be the ones that change just because they decide to.
What if he is? Let's say it's not that he's not speaking up enough, but he is raising his hand and they're not calling him. What if he made a joke out of him and brought like a siren that he put on the desk and he'd turn on when he's ready to speak, just to make a joke out of the fact that they won't call on him?
Yeah. Or just he can choke David Muir with one of his ties that he's not wearing.
That's an alternative as well. Okay,
I went too far.
There was one question about this, which might be fun, but especially the day after this debate, why is the mainstream media spinning for Biden so much?
Oh, we know, guys, why, right? They believe, or it's convenient for them to believe, that he is the best candidate to defeat Donald Trump. Everyone in the media wants to defeat Donald Trump. So like that part's real. With good reason this time, but they want a more centrist Democrat to defeat him, and they see him as the leader in the polls. They don't believe Bernie and Warren's surges as much. They certainly don't believe Bernie's. They sort of believe Warren's, but they're convinced that Biden, the poll leader, is the best candidate to defeat Donald Trump. When you look at the battleground states that we would need, and Bernie is polling very similarly in Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, all of those things. So yeah, they're incentivized to do it because that's their bias.
Exactly. Yeah, and in the polls in Texas, Bernie and Biden are both beating Trump by a lot, very similarly, which should sort of undercut like you need to be an out and out moderate to try to get people in these states to vote for you. So Ben Capozzi said in all caps, more Emma Vigeland all the time, with a big thumbs up. And then there was a question from Chandrahas, who says, what do you feel is the possibility of a Sanders Warren team up?
So my take on it is, I think if Bernie's leading and Bernie wins the nomination, he'll make her the VP.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the other way around.
Who do you think that she would choose?
I think Castro's making a pretty big bid for it right now. Pretty big?
Big water, huge.
Yeah,
maybe. Yeah, he's the big cake that we need. I don't know. Yeah, I guess I'm not really sure. I could definitely see him choosing her. There would be consequences to that. I mean, she's a senator, and they kind of need to take the Senate, but they probably would be
Massachusetts
fine.
Massachusetts would be okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit of a potential cost. I could potentially see it, but you never know. I mean, there's a lot of great people who are not running for president right now that could also be chosen.
Yeah, I mean, Stacey Abrams has been floated as a VP candidate from everyone from Joe Biden to someone like Bernie Sanders. So she's kind of a blank slate in that area. We don't know.
And
That's why she's also not running for Senate.
Yeah, possibly. And I've been saying this for a long time, and most people seem to think I'm crazy. Am I crazy when I say that I both think it would be an awesome idea, and it could actually happen that Bernie could choose AOC?
I would love that.
Why not?
But
she's
not old enough, right?
Is there a congressional requirement for vice president? A constitutional requirement?
Well, if Bernie were to die,
I thought that there wasn't for vice president.
Sorry, God forbid. But I would assume that the vice president would have to be the same age requirement as the president.
I'm not sure if in the section of succession, if it actually has the same stipulation.
I think it's.
I'm not sure. I will look. But it would be awesome if it could happen in that 8 years later.
Are you kidding me?
She runs for president?
I would freak out.
Oh, I can't wait. I know it's a long time off, but I can't wait for her to run.
Yeah.
And she has to run. I'm going to tweet her every day between now and then. 8 years. It's going to be 2,400 tweets or something.
Yeah, you're going to be like an old man, just decrepit, still tweeting ones like this.
I'm getting there. Well, up until the old man comment, it was good talking to you. It's great to have you here.
Now we're on bad terms.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for sending in your questions and comments for Emma. Again, you can find her on Twitter, RebelHQ, and all of that. So thank you again.
Thanks so much, John.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.